should really go talk to this person. That's just one caucus. So we have the tribes, small forest landowners. I mean, it seems like 25 to 30 is probably low. I don't know if 50 is right. There's probably some opportunity to build in even more flexibility as long as we can fund it, right?
Right.
So if you reach this, then let's have a conversation and see if it needs to be expanded a little bit.
And that number was, I expected it to be low and also somewhat of a guess, regardless, because interviews could be grouped. There could be multiple people participating in one interview or not.
Yeah.
So there's just really, it's going to depend on a lot of factors that are outside of our control. But we want to make sure that we have the space to do the due diligence and make sure that it's done the right way and that it's as inclusive as possible. I totally agree with that. So we can put 50 in there as a starting point in terms of, you know, what the response is going to be from potential facilitators that it would respond to this contract. And then we, as we negotiate a scope of work, we can get into the specific details about, okay, we need to build flexibility into this task that we can add additional interviews if necessary. We don't want to stop at some arbitrary number. So we could do that. We could do that. And I don't think that specific thing, if we're already at 50, you know, going to 75 or even 80 isn't going to double the cost or anything like that.
For me, I just wanted to make sure that we indicated this was a big enough project that the resources, you know, from whatever facilitator is chosen or can adequately address this.
Right.
But I, you know, the more I thought about how many names have been mentioned just in terms of public comment and let's start with 50. Okay. And I still think we may go beyond that number.
Maybe say at least 50.
Yeah.
Lisa, this is Brent.
Yes.
I'm sorry, could you repeat? You said let's start, did you say 15 or
50? 50.
Okay,
at least. And
okay, thank you.
And I think the note just went down as at least 50.
Okay.
I'll try to better enunciate, sorry.
No, that's okay. I just was having trouble hearing a few people, but I can hear you now. And 50 sounds good to me, much better than 15.
Okay, good. Hans, you mentioned the concept of confidentiality in the reporting.
Yeah.
I guess I'd like just some feedback from committee on how exactly that works. I think anonymity is one thing, but you know, so that comments are grouped or whatever so that they but can be presented, but who determines or how would you in a public process determine something was confidential and not included at all?
So I think a good facilitator will hear things and then provide generic comments in their reports about here are the concerns I heard, but if there are specific things that are attributed to a person or a caucus.
So date and name. Okay.
Yeah, we don't want to have that, but here are the concerns we've been hearing and that probably need to be addressed when we have that meeting in order to get to a the big question will be, what are the things the caucuses want to discuss in order to get to a recommitment to TFW, you know, right?
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, there's also techniques like the facilitator can ask, like, in terms of content, like, is this something that you are willing to allow me to share in the report?
Right.
You know, because there can be things where someone is, you know, they're venting, essentially. And this is like, oh, God, I had to get it off my chest.
I'm so sorry,
don't
but
say
I
that.
Cannot hear Paula.
Okay, oh, sorry about that.
Paula.
Sorry about that. So I was saying that there's facilitators can ask interviewees what they're willing to share publicly. And again, it doesn't have to be attributed to a person. And then, you know, there's, again, in this Wolf process that I was involved in, where the facilitator interviewed like about 100 people and then wrote a report that reports online. And it's a good example of like how she conveyed a lot of you know, a lot of information about an intense conflict, but, you know, did it in a way that didn't reveal anybody's identity. She just talked about it, you know, sort of by community and you know, kind of by topic. And, mm-hmm. and so at that, you know, that report can be shared with whoever we hire as a facilitator is a good example, maybe, of how to protect people's identities but still get the information across.
So that's why I use that anonymity is right. perhaps a better word, and even in the discussion with the facilitator, rather than total confidentiality.
Yeah. It's trying to get it at the top.
I start thinking Russian email.
Right.
Or something.
who's not thinking about Russian emails?
2.5-hour drive this morning is all I heard on CNN, on all the channels. Okay. No Russian email. Just keep that as a footnote to our
SOE. Can I maybe talk on a different angle on the same
yes.
topic? I kind of feel like we're. Can you hear me, Brent?
I kind of
feel like we're dancing around. What we're trying to get is the right people saying what needs to be said so that we have a solid foundation from which to figure out the path forward. I lead with that, and then on the other side of it, it's the making the notes from the principals' conversations public. And so I don't know what the makeup is, you know, is there gonna be a quorum of board members in the principals' meetings or not, but I kind of feel like there needs to be maybe a lot more like direct conversation, that if those are gonna be public, posted as public notes or meeting notes, that maybe that's not gonna allow the principals to have a really super candid, safe conversation and say what needs to be said so that we can move forward. My intuition is telling me to be a little nervous about that component.
Well, isn't part of that addressed in how in our regular TFW ground rules, as far as how we talk about meetings like this regarding now I don't know whether we would have a quorum at one of these principals meetings, okay? I mean,
well, if we do, that's a public meeting.
But it's still, I mean, there's going to be expectations around this principals meeting, and getting agreement on what's going to be reported out to the public is going to be important. And also some ground rules around how you treat each other in that forum. So, like, I'm not gonna tell everybody Jeff Davis said so-and-so, or, if they do ask you, well, what do the landowners think? Well, you need to talk to the landowners. I mean, I'm not gonna. So, I mean, there's some basic ground rules that we've had in place for a long time about how to do that. And I think that was handed out as part of the stuff that Hans has produced.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's a public meeting, dealing with a quorum of the board members or not, there's. And it's not like we have not had press present in previous TFW meetings, so we're all aware when it happens, but, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, maybe that the interviews with the principals can kind of lead up to that line of thinking.
Yes.
I would absolutely expect for it to be a public meeting. You know, I mean, that whole process, it's hard to say that we're going to build trust and then have a closed meeting of the principals. But that's just a thought. But this is even so right to the point of the scope of work. It's really important that we get that, you know, the right facilitator and then the right grouping of questions as a lead up. But I've I've noted that as a concern. I wouldn't have thought about that, honestly, so.
I'm hoping that, you know, if you have the president of Weyerhaeuser sitting in a public meeting, are they gonna be able to engage in the conversation in a way that allows us to talk about what needs to be talked about?
Right.
And I get the facilitator will pull that out of the principals in those initial, but then when you come together as principals to go, okay, here's the general themes, if it's really public and it could affect your business or in industry's case, you know, do people bail out of the market because of what they're hearing in a public meeting? I know that's really overly dramatic, but I'm hoping that we can be really thoughtful so that it's a safe environment so that we can have the type of conversations I think we all want to have.
Yeah, it would be interesting to me to see if it would actually be possible to not have it be an open public meeting, you know, if there's less than a quorum and to provide that safety. And if, you know, I think there's ways to talk to other folks about saying like this is about being able to be frank and move these issues forward in a way that may not happen when you get, it would be impossible for a facilitator to bring along the entire public in the process in the trust building, and that's when you do have these elements of folks that are, you know, either may feel threatened by the process or don't understand it, and you know, and might deliberately take things out of context or whatever, and it really can affect the, you know, the ability of participants to, you know, and especially if this particular set of principles hasn't really worked together before, because the, you know, folks have changed. It's not the same as the original TFW folks. So in order to establish that trust, you might need a little bit more of a protective process. So, I mean, and if you get all sorts of flack from folks, then maybe you can't do it, but I would worry that the outcomes would be maybe less than we had hoped for if it can't be somehow protected.
Go ahead, David.
Trying to remember how public the process of TFW was in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I suspect it was not a public process, so I think what we're trying to get to is an updated process that works for us, that'll be spelled out, that'll be shared with the public. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure there's a need to share with the public the sausage making part of it, how we got there. So try to keep that in mind.
And I mean, just one other thought. I mean, our state is particular in terms of having sensitivity to, you know, we've got all sunshine laws and Open Public Meetings Act, and I think the point that Dave just made about, you know, the outcome of that meeting would be shared with the public, and because it's about sort of recommitting to a process, it's not like any actual public policy decisions are going to be made behind closed doors. It's really about improving the commitments to improving the process, but the outcome of that will still be. We'll still be discussions in front of the board and CEMA meetings and, you know, Forest and Fish policy meetings, and those are, you know, those are all public, right? And so it's not like the outcome in terms of improved process would be hidden from view. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, back to the board, the quorum of the board, if the board is not, like you said, if there's not an action being taken, if they're just present in the room, then that isn't the same thing as a board meeting or a committee where there are decisions that are being made. If the board is in the audience, that's a different. Or the participants that are on the board that are also caucus principals would be acting in a different capacity than as a board. So there might be some discussion about, you know, I mean, there could be some nuances there that, and some special effort to be taken to not make it the actual meeting, a public meeting, but still have it public. or some way to describe what was discussed. We can look into that. I think there are ways to do that.
Are you okay?
I'm going to go check on something. I'll be right back.
Does it have anything to do with state patrol? What,
yes.
Going by?
Okay,
that's only a... I believe in situational awareness. And
yes.
When I see armed people walking by, I just am reaching for the bat now.
You guys okay there?
Yeah. So far as we know.
Yes, we're fine.
Well, that explains some of Paula's looks.
So as you know, okay, so there's a distinct interest on the... Okay.
It's for Brent.
It's for Brent.
Oh, Brent. It was just making sure I was loud and articulate and clear when I spoke into the little microphone, so Brent could hear me.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. We. Okay. So distinct interest in keeping the principals' meetings, or at least their initial meeting, closed. Mm-hmm. Sausage making.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Learn something. And then we had set up to 3 meetings, just thinking that it would take that long to work through their issues. Wasn't that a requirement for, or not a requirement, but an annual meeting or semi-annual meeting that was mentioned as a part of the original agreement?
Right. There was supposed to be an annual meeting. He can speak to that better than I can, but that was the intent, was that there would be this annual meeting, and that hasn't happened for some time.
Okay.
One of the things about the commitment to...
Are you locked
up? Yeah. Well, potentially, yes.
There.
It's,
we're sort of... I was asked to lock us in, so...
Okay.
Just right there.
We can continue our meeting, but we do need to be situational.
We should. Thank you. Hey, Stephen, I think we should shut the blinds.
Yeah. Can you make us aware?
Yeah, can make us all aware about what's happening?
This is neither an earthquake nor a...
Yeah.
There's some police activity. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of police activity going on around.
I see that, yeah.
So the information that I have is that there was a potential active shooter in OB2, and that it's not practice, it's real. There's unmarked vehicles and sirens, and so we're in lockdown to be
Yeah, there were
safe. I just gave directions to
somebody.
I know, OB2.
Yes.
He went OB2 in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. She looked harmless.
Yeah,
she did look good.
Oh, shit.
Get a big couple back.
Determined again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we?
We can continue. We just.
Are we locked in the room or the
We are locked in the room for the moment.
And you guys would get a text if this escalates.
I will find out.
Yeah. My informant is moving far from the building at this time, so I probably won't know anything more unless our enforcement. I could actually go ask our enforcement.
Why are we not?
That would be good.
I can. Oh, that's a good idea.
Our enforcement is
right there. My guys are up on the fourth floor.
So I'll like say it's Jeff Davis from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and you'll let me know.
Well, you got a nice big badge on your chest.
I'm not being
code word.
Thank you for sharing with us what was going on.
Yeah, well.
I thought it was like you were looking up legal opinion.
No. This was a lot more serious than that.
The discussion was about the follow-up meetings, and Lisa brought up the original intent of having an annual meeting. Principals.
Well, actually, we actually made a commitment in the settlement agreement to meet at least twice a year, and we have not carried through with that. There's sometimes have been once a year meetings right before ledge session to get our act together, but it's really clear to me that we need more than what we've been doing, and as Paula indicated, we've got new players around the table. We're not all on the same page, I don't think, on moving forward. That's the whole idea here, is to get us back on the same page.
Okay. All right, so in terms of the scope of work, are there committee members, are there other, any other comments or questions you have in defining, I know it's a little distracting, under description, the scope of work?
Maybe what would be helpful while people are being thoughtful is Hans could go through the process and we could talk about the process of hiring a facilitator. Because we can, this is just a straw dog, and that's, it's been helpful to get some comments today. And my suggestion to the subcommittee chair is that we talk about process because, you know, we can modify the scope of work all the way until we...
Well, the reason I wanted to talk about it a little bit was because depending on how big the straw dog is, you know, well, I looked down that list of facilitators and didn't recognize or know any of them, good or bad. And that requirement, you know, I actually questioned the requirement whether they needed to have natural resource background, although that is the very first bullet point. So, you know, kind of knowing what we want, then it helps identify whether that, but yeah, let's talk about what those choices are going through the master list or a longer process.
Yeah, so you saw the master contract list, and what this really is people have the ability to sign up on a master contract list and are able to, they respond to these general descriptions for facilitation and facilitators, and they also list rates. And so they lock in a rate that they're going to charge for those services. And so it's helpful for the state to be able to look through this list quickly, already have negotiated what it's going to cost, with the expectation that all of these skill sets will be available, and make it happen pretty quickly. Now the pretty quickly part is, it saves a couple of weeks, basically, is the way it works out, versus going out for bid fresh. Now when you go out for bid, you know, in an RFP process, the rates are going to come in where they come in. And so some of the same people that may charge, let's say, $100 an hour on this list, if they respond to an RFP, they might list $225. You don't have any control over that. The value in doing that is you're casting a wider net than people that initially wanted to commit to being on this master contract list for all kinds of state contracts. You know, it certainly could be natural resources. It could be a negotiation of tribal and recreational fishing rights. It could be a lot of different things. It could be some kind of a union discussion. And there's so many different things that it could be part of that you end up generally getting people that are that are generalists. That's typically what you have here. And so if we need a specific skill set, and we look through this list, it's a good due diligence thing to look through the list first, take advantage of that. But if we don't see the right skill set there, we're not obligated to go through this list. Well, we would go through an RFP process, develop a proposal, which is different than the scope of work. That's the scope of work happens at the contract level, and that's why Stephen said it can change up to the time it's signed. We can refine it. So this is just an out of the gate thought of what it may look like. So with the RFP process, you know, there's a notice that goes out for at least 2 weeks. Then there's a review of those proposals. That's usually a week. Then there's a decision or a selection step that would happen, which I would assume would probably be this committee doing the selection. And then there's a potential interview piece where you would want to interview some of maybe the top three or top five facilitators to make sure you're getting exactly what you need. And then there's a notice at that point for another week for any kind of challenge that somebody could make. And then after that point, you go into negotiations with the contractor to get a contract signed, with the scope of work being the basis of the contract. So there are a number of steps that have to be done in sequence, but it's not insurmountable. We've done contracts like these, similar to these, with more developed scopes. That's the key, is really tightening up the scope and the expectations in, you know, around 6 weeks. That's typically what you can do if you have a good scope. If the scope needs, if there's more negotiation than that, then it would take longer than that. But that gives enough flexibility in the dates, you know, roughly a week or so to do the interviews that you may want to do, to work with your schedule and their schedule and that kind of thing to make sure you get the right person. But I would say that it's going to be a 6-week process. If you go with the master contract list, it saves about 2 weeks. You still have the opportunity for interviews. It doesn't take that away, but you know, these will be the people that would respond.
Okay.
So you're shrinking your universe by going with the master contract list. But if what you need is there, then it's a simpler, slightly simpler process.
Okay. And like I said, I looked at the master contract list, didn't recognize, had not had the opportunity to work with the contractors listed. So, you know, I look to this, the committee to, you know, so there's rate risk by going outside to open bid. We have rate risk on that too.
You can also use cost as a criteria for evaluation. And we have to list the criteria up front. So people, when they respond, they can really do their best to score well, mm-hmm. in the selection process. The cost always is a criteria. So it's in their best interest.
But it doesn't have to be the...
It's not the sole...
That's the right. Sole or the biggest criteria. Mm-hmm. We want to get the best person
for
the job. Mm-hmm. And so cost is just a factor, one of many factors that we may want to... evaluate each applicant.
I've seen it as much as 50% and as little as 10.
Oh.
So there's a wide range of what you think are the criteria, the right criteria.
Okay.
And I would make the pitch that the facilitator, this is the key role in making this thing successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so making sure we have the right person is probably more important than I would argue even the time,
mm-hmm.
getting the right person in this position is key success.
Although these could easily be time and materials contracts as opposed to a product-based contract, there needs to be sort of a melding so that a contractor isn't given a blank
not to
check.
Exceed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so.
That's what we would do because we have more, there's less risk on both parties by having it that way,
mm-hmm.
than there is with deliverables. Then we have a lot of risk on our end. So that, in terms of the quality of the products and so forth, so that real time and materials would be the recommended way to go for this.
Okay. So, committee members, are you, which way are you leaning? Looking to the master list for a particular? Is there somebody on the list you'd recommend, Hans?
You know, to be honest with you, I have experience working with about 3 of these is all. And so and those 3 I would say would not be successful. They're very good at what they do. I don't mean anything. The people that I've worked with on this list are very good,
mm-hmm.
but this is a different role than any capacity that I've worked with any of them. So mm-hmm. I can't recommend them.
Okay.
So I would recommend opening it up to an RFQ process that doesn't necessarily, I mean, anybody on this list can apply, right? But
they will all be notified.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
But I don't think we should limit it to this.
Okay. I tend to lean that way too.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
There are some good ones on the list, but I know there are also some good ones that are not on the list.
And this is such an important, important grouping. We've got a shot to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that, yeah. David, are you?
Yeah, I did go through the list yesterday, and I didn't recognize any of the companies or facilitators on the list. So, you know, going out for RFP is fine with me. I did have one question I wanted to ask about the description process on item number four is scheduling of three meetings during the biennium. That makes me go, wow, that's 2 years. I think there's an urgency. And so that makes me a little nervous when I see that kind of a time frame. And I wanted to bring that up is, you know, why is it that? I mean, we're supposed to make some recommendations to the board, I think, in August based on our meetings here. Should time frame be something that we should be considering? Because that just feels like a long time.
I can speak to that, and this is a communication problem on my end. The contract would last through the biennium, but the first meeting I think is essential to have, you know, sooner rather than later.
Late fall
or early fall.
Okay.
Interviews can be done in time, we can do it right and set it up. Maybe the end of September, but it's for the whole. All three of those meetings would have to occur within the next 2 years. And so I see the first one being this, theoretically, would be early this fall, and the second one would probably be in the spring, and then there would be a follow-up meeting to talk about some of the other issues like budget and just check-in probably the following fall, or something like that. But I didn't mean to assume that just sometime in the next 2 years it would happen. Those are the kinds of I'll take those notes though, absolutely, because we do need to specify the time and the scope of work, obviously. It's having target dates for some of the deliverables and milestones. So,
okay.
If that was an oversight, I apologize.
Brent, you're the only one that didn't chime in. You're okay with going out with a RFQ?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say that I agree with, it sounds like most of you or all of you that an RFQ is the way to go. Yep, good idea.
Okay, sounds good. Does the subcommittee need a formal vote to do that, or we just set it so it happens?
Can I talk about some next steps for that?
Yeah.
What are you wanting
a budget?
I wasn't even going to talk about that yet.
Okay.
But that's a very good point. What I was going to suggest is as we're developing the RFP, we put specific criteria that we ask for them to respond to. And so I want to make sure that that gets adequate review by the subcommittee, and if you think the board, that would happen. So we just need to plan that some time to spend it at either the next meeting, or if you want to postpone for the board meeting or something, to maintain the momentum to make this happen. We just need to make a plan for establishing those criteria. And I can work with my project managers to start a draft that you can all comment on. I think that would probably be helpful. But we're going to need to have some discussion about what those specific components are, and then also the scoring criteria. And it can be percentages. And I can start with one that we've done on the facilitation contract so you can look at it, and then adjust as you want. But there's going to be some more work involved before we can send it out.
Okay. So what time frame for drafting criteria? I mean, we're in the 12th of July. We're hoping to have one more meeting before the full board meeting. So would we look at it at that point?
Or absolutely.
Or would you want it to come to the full board in August? The criteria for facilitators.
No, so criteria. So you mean like qualifications, or what are you speaking to?
Qualifications. What we typically do is we describe what's expected for each of the deliverables in some detail, So for the interviews, the questions would address, you know, these six things. And then with the scope of work, you get more specific. But in terms of the response, so they know what's required and what they're in some, it works for both parties. We know what we're getting and they know what they're getting. And so we have to have that criteria for up before they will even submit a bid. The scope of work that we have isn't enough. That really isn't enough of that, enough detail. I can work on a draft of that, be happy to bring it to the next meeting. If you want to share the draft after we talk about it with the board, there would still be time before we had to let it out. If you wanted to do that? I'm open.
I want to keep this ball rolling.
Right.
Personally. So if we still need to work on this statement of work, let's get that done as quickly as we can. So I guess to the subcommittee members, yeah, is that the question really comes down to how much of this do you want to have a hand in versus giving staff some direction to move forward? And I guess that would be my question. And if staff can send out some criteria, and certainly we can talk about, based on, the deliverables and budget, we can talk about how you would, sort of the direction for ranking
right
now in just a few minutes. But how much more does the subcommittee want to talk about?
I would love to see it go out, but I would appreciate getting, we're a small enough group that, yeah, at least getting to see the product before it hits the streets, I think would be appropriate.
Okay.
I think it'll be a better product, yeah, if you all have it. At least this group, if this group has a chance to dive in and look for those details, I think it would
let it out. Okay.
So, yeah, that would be good. So a couple weeks, what do you think here?
At the next meeting. When we schedule the next meeting, we'll have it. And we'll send it out at least 2 days before the next meeting. Earlier if we can.
Okay. Yeah, it'd be nice. I think it could actually, we'll see where we schedule the next meeting, but it would be possible for this to get dropped out just as a courtesy email and not even be required at a meeting.
Yeah.
We've already said, let's go with an RFQ. But back to that budget question, do we have to have a budget amount?
I think we need to have a target amount, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe
that goes out with, because when you, do they know what the estimate is?
We can do it either way. We can say what the ceiling is, not mm-hmm. to exceed, mm-hmm. or we can leave it blank and they tell us what it would cost mm-hmm. to do that. And there are advantages in both of those.
Okay. Would it make more sense for you to flesh out the criteria and the deliverables and then put some numbers to it? Anything we're doing here, yeah, is just theoretic.
Well, it'd be nice to know if there was a ceiling that...
I think we're going to have to discuss a ceiling.
Yeah, I think so too.
Would a ceiling, though, affect our ability to get what I thought our goal was, which is the best person to help us do this?
No, not necessarily. It actually works to our advantage sometimes. If you ask a contractor, can you do this scope of work for this much money, either they're going to tell us. Some contractors will still submit proposals for more money, even though you put a, this is how much we have budgeted for this. They will, and that'll send us a clear message. Either we've totally missed the target, or if you want me, this is how much it's going to cost you.
So in my experience, those people are rare.
Yeah.
They just don't do a proposal.
Yeah.
which could have us losing out on maybe the best person or the best proposal. And if you put a ceiling and we don't get the right people in the mix, we just caused a delay for ourselves, right? You have a decision to hire someone that we don't really think can do the job, or repost, and you're out another couple weeks.
Well, the other thing to do is to identify a ceiling internally, right? And not post it and not include it. But just so we have an idea of what the budget request is going to be, so we can manage the budget. Or look for the necessary amount of money in the budget in savings as it is now. And those are the kinds of things I would want to be able to communicate to the full board.
And that's just that's like doing your allotments in your budget, right?
It's right, a guess. Right. It is. I agree.
Because it might still come in like, oh, hey, $150,000, and then the best proposal comes in, $350,000, and now we have some choices.
That's right. That's probably a very real possibility, whatever we decide.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. We're looking for an internal cap, or?
Well, we're going to have to, at the board meeting, aren't we going to have to ask for money
budget
for this?
Budget authority.
That's the best way to do it.
So that'll be our...
Okay. We do need a number. I guess I'm flying a
little. Do you
want to
wait until the next meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm flying a little bit blind until we flesh out, because I can go, 50 interviews times, 2 hours plus write-up time plus,
right.
It's just an estimate on estimate on estimate.
Right. It is. It is.
And there's a wide variance of what people charge for this kind of work.
Well, and things
in ways they charge. Sometimes it's hourly and sometimes it's sort of per type of task, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we have, note-taking responsibilities as well. And so if it's a one-person shop, then their rates are going to be higher for note-taking than if they have multiple people.
That raises an issue. I mean, we could have a less expensive contract if we got someone who works for the state, maybe,
right,
to take notes. I mean, we do that in our Wolf Advisory Group meetings, and so the facilitator can actually pay attention to, facilitating the meeting and not actually having to take notes.
It's not so much the meetings, probably it's insight. It's in the all those interviews and compiling
information. Oh, well, that part, yeah. But right. No. That's a good
at the
point.
Actual
but there
broader
was a,
meetings.
There was a
we
task
can probably,
if
the subcommittee wants us to, we can provide note taken at the principal's meeting.
At the principal's meeting, yeah. I wasn't thinking about
that. If people would rather not pay for a note taker to do that.
This is my concern. And I'm trying to think about the entire program.
Mm-hmm.
And by having somebody neutral taking notes, I think you have buy-in, maybe a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just a tiny amount more than if someone from or something takes them.
Right.
That was the only thing I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And if the facilitator is also responsible for notes, and they don't have staff or somebody less expensive to focus on that task, there are ways that can be done just by recording it, an audible recording, why it won't interrupt their ability. Because what we're paying for really is the facilitation role, not the note taking. But I just want to make sure that when we put it in here that they know that's a responsibility. So, and I can tell you that sometimes we've had contracts where people will, sub out a specific task, and that would probably be a good one of those tasks that it would make sense. But some of the firms just have note-taking or staff that do the note, that typically do notes. We have a contract with Triangle & Associates for the policy facilitation, for example. And that's the function that they provide. We have the co-chairs that facilitate the meeting, but we have a specific note taker that does some of that type of work.
If you set up the requirements so that that note-taking is a line item. If we choose to strike it, that would probably satisfy everybody. In the
true.
Which we would.
Good.
Yeah, okay. We absolutely would.
So then we can decide that when the polls came back in. All right. So we'll talk about, so budget we're going to kick to our next meeting based on what your criteria look like. And also on our list is, I'm looking at our time, we're at about 45 minutes until we need a public comment period. So, and then identifying those who who need to be interviewed. I really wanted to start compiling a list in the database so that it was both reviewed and, our contact information was appropriate collected for the principals in particular, since that goes back to people who are no longer in those particular positions. But I don't know that we need to take this meeting time.
No, I don't think. I think we all have our lists.
Is this confidential, or is it anonymous?
No. TFW, there's a whole scat of people on the TFW policy list. There's a scat of people on Seamer's list. There's, our usual contacts with other principals.
Right.
So I think there's actually, without a lot of work, requesting some of the caucuses to forward any specific people they want us to kind of make sure the contractor contacts, we can get those as part of the, once the contractor is on board, we can give them a list of people to start with and then let them figure
like
out.
Like the threads.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe it's, as the newest person at this table, I'm a little more blind to what all that history is, but I'll defer to those of you who are much more in the know. Yes.
Okay.
All right. But that's why that was on the list. Okay. So we're good for the facilitator process, where we're going with that, and Hans has got the laboring oar.
So just to make sure because I want to be clear about what decisions we made and what assignments we made.
Yes, okay.
So we provided comments on the statement of work. Hans is going to edit that based on the comments received. He's going to get us some criteria to review at the next meeting. We're going to do an RFP. What else?
Hans is going to provide budget and extend with the budget.
Yeah, thank you.
That in here. That's all I had.
Okay. All right.
Brent, are you clear where we're going with that facilitation piece?
I think so.
Okay.
I think I'm tracking. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Sometimes, I know sometimes it's hard to just speak up and interrupt when you're on the phone, but feel free.
Let me ask. Is there any, are we still under lockdown?
According to King 5 News, we are.
Yeah.
It came up on my phone.
All Capital Campus is on lockdown.
Wow.
Okay.
So stay away from the window.
Well, I know. Do you marry
I'm going to have to quit drinking coffee.
technically, you're supposed to turn off the lights, too.
We can turn off the lights.
When you're locked.
Wow, I'm okay with that. I have places to be after this.
I went over to our enforcement and there's nobody there because they're all out there.
Oh,
wow.
See, are we supposed to go outside?
We're supposed to absolutely stay right where we are. They won't let you outside of this building.
No, but other people that were already out, you're saying?
Everyone that was already out of the building got escorted away from the building.
Yeah. Yeah, they're right out here, the armed.
Okay, well, we'll protect them.
We literally have our enforcement and state patrol.
Yes.
All around OB2, so anyone that comes out of there is.
Yeah, they're right out here with long.
Going to be contacted.
I thought Nice.
Full gear.
Okay, is everybody perfectly comfortable with this situation?
Yeah, I mean, that's not ideal.
Hey, everyone. Am I understanding that you are surrounded by people with the troopers? This sounds really...
yeah, but their guns are pointed the other direction. Right. We're their backstop. They're protecting us.
Yes. But yes, your understanding is correct. There are people with guns outside the window.
And I'm very sorry.
Thanks.
You know, and I thought the big story was going to be the closed parking lot, and I had to, like, hike up the hill and around the corner and stuff, but and hope that I had enough quarters in that funny-looking machine.
Yeah, and another...
Do you know anything about why?
Active shooting.
There was an active shooting in a building on the Capitol campus about 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, and it says to, it's all locked down, all Capitol campus, and there was law enforcement activity occurring on the East Capitol campus, and so we need to shelter in place in the buildings.
Okay.
Aren't you glad you're east of the Cascades?
Finally got the alert. We're in lockdown.
You're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well. All right. Okay. So, let's talk. So, agenda item 3 is to discuss the adaptive management program improvement. And you're going to do a little refresher course, which Hans, so I'll turn to you on how the structure actually works between.
Pass this. If you can read it now.
I know.
What I did is I'll talk about the structure first, but I also, what I'm handing out right now are the buckets. You know, we talked about the low-hanging fruit, and so I tried to identify them by the challenges that they're going to present being implemented, organized by simple ones, things that the board doesn't need to take any action. I think CEMA and policy can just do that on their own. I think there's broad support for those, so those are probably the easy things to do, or in my mind they're easy. And then the intermediate things, that's where there needs to be more work done, and that would include things like the principal's meeting that needs to happen, and a number of things for policy and CEMER. And then what I left off are the ones that are the challenging category, and the reason I left those off is because those will require rule changes, and you know, that's in terms of low-hanging fruit, it's not even a fruit, so I figured we wouldn't put the non-fruit items in the bucket. They're still out there, that we still need to talk about them, but you know, for this exercise I didn't want to spend too much time on those things that we've already more or less heard a lot of testimony about, and are a little bigger than what we're talking about here. Restructuring, policy, starting over, some of those things. So.
Can I ask a process question before we go into this?
Yes.
So, so we're having discussion as a subcommittee. You know, we're getting your recommendations. We're getting some public comment. But what's the overall process for deciding on, you know, which of these changes we're actually gonna pursue? Because my sense from listening to public testimony, and then I've had some conversations with a few folks since then, is that there's not agreement on all of this stuff, or there might be, like, you know, really good friendly amendments out there from, you know, active participants in the program. So how are we going to incorporate all of that input and decide on exactly, you know, which changes and the wording of the change recommendations and moving forward?
So my perception of that, and let me just, you know, since we're a subcommittee of the board, that you know, we'll be making certain recommendations, yet to be determined recommendations, up to the board level. Mm-hmm. And I'm, I guess, highly cognizant, and like you, have received some input outside of the committee, where there's a
change management is always a challenge, mm-hmm. and we have to as much manage the messaging and how that goes through. And so it would be, I think, inappropriate for this committee to just say, go and start doing stuff without rolling that up to the full board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so as Stephen sits here and can deliver that message out through, you know, the agenda process, that the board would have to agree to any list of things that this committee is recommending. I am the one who kept saying low-hanging fruit, because it seemed like when we first read the list of potential changes, that there were and potentially are some things that can be done that are not not earth-changing, mm-hmm. although maybe they all are. I don't know what the level of tolerance is for change within all those organizations. But it's got to the direction has to come from the board, since we're a subcommittee to the board. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Thoughts or reactions?
That's great, and that makes a lot of sense. But I'm also wondering about even us as a subcommittee, getting comments and recommendations, from others outside of our subcommittee that help us kind of decide what we would want to recommend mm-hmm. to the larger board, I guess. Will we accommodate that? I mean, we're hearing public comment, but kind of like it's at the end and we don't necessarily have a chance to discuss it. And, say we get comments from other folks, written comments from other folks during this subcommittee process, how do we sort of digest that and say, essentially I'm asking, do we have enough time? Do we have process to, kind of really go through these things and say, well, I don't quite understand this one. I know we started that last meeting, or I've heard someone say that they would rather do it like this instead. What do you guys think? I mean, there's a lot of stuff here, and it seems really meaty, and I'm just wanting to make sure that we have the opportunity to wrap our heads around, the implications of all this stuff, and we're not sort of making recommendations that we're not certain of.
Fair enough. I think that's fair enough. And then, of course, when we, getting the information, now, it is hard to go through it completely, because I need that percolating time outside of the actual meeting mm-hmm. reading. David?
I was going to just say I agree with Paula's concerns. I think it's real helpful to go through the review of the program and kind of the history, the responsibilities. I think that's all good for us. In terms of, I think we are supposed to make some recommendations to the board at our next meeting. I expect them to be not very earth-shattering recommendations. I mean, I think we're going to report out, we're going to recommend hiring a facilitator, for instance. Those general kinds of recommendations. I mean, there is an urgency, yes, but on the other hand, we want to do this right as well. So there are a lot of opinions to take into consideration here. So try not to put too much on myself that I'm going to make some real strong recommendation at this next meeting, do something earth-shattering. That's not certainly what my intent is.
Okay. Stephen, you look like you want to say something.
Well, so when I was chairing the board, it was clear that there are a lot of opinions on what needs to change, and part of this is getting feedback. So, I mean, it would seem to me, Paula, that, for example, if we went through some of this stuff and understood, if we decided to tackle like the simple stuff on this memo, mm-hmm. And just see if we can look at some of this stuff. I get the tenet. The balance is making sure we get feedback, but also knowing that we really need to push things forward. Mm-hmm. So figuring out how to balance the reticence of some members of TFW to not change anything, mm-hmm. with knowing that it's healthy to change, mm-hmm. and figuring out which of those buttons to push and help them move forward. So, for example, I'll give you an example. For example, if we thought the table setting around CMR should change, so would we decide that, or would we assign that to CMR and say, bring us back a thing with based on these criteria? You know, there's different options on mm-hmm. how to make this happen mm-hmm. and to push change forward. Mm-hmm. Because I think you heard a lot of comments in the last two board meetings that there are some needs.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not disputing that. It's just, you know, I mean, even down to clarifying wording on you know, some of the stuff from Hans's memo to or adding things. I mean, I heard from someone who's a participant saying that lots of this stuff is good, but I would do it like this instead. Or there are some key issues that aren't even being addressed here, and I would suggest adding these things. So it wasn't in the vein of I don't want to see any change. It was glad you guys are thinking about this, but here's some ways to make it better. And I just want to make sure that we're able to take those things in and work with them.
Okay. Yeah. So I think process is everything, right? Yeah. That's sort of the TFW way, but we do need to have a path forward. And so maybe having Hans take us through how it works now, and then relate these first items to how it works now and why these are suggested, or and a sense of are these things that everybody agrees need to be changed, or is this just your observations as the adaptive management administrator? Things like that would be helpful.
So okay, I mean, I'm happy to do
Does
that.
Does that make sense to you? Lisa,
well, yeah, and I guess the part that was giving me pause is that, all these recommendations that are here following all of your interviews with, so many different people, implementing the changes by saying, giving back to CMR and saying, is there a path to do this? Will you do this? Can you do this?
Oh, no. Oh, I was more in the directive sense.
Okay. All right.
So, you got 2 months to report back to the board on...
I don't even have 2 months.
Or something like that. Or two meetings or whatever,
Okay. All right. Do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. And just to kind of set the stage, there's two things. In the previous documents, in the report that I gave to the board in May, I talk about the roles of the administrator. So I'm in a unique position where I'm not a caucus. I'm not a caucus participant. So I'm looking at the overall structure of the program. In order to accomplish the goals of the program, I'm looking at it from the bottom to the top, and I'm seeing places where there are inefficiencies or where we make mistakes and we don't get the quality, in my opinion, to the board to make decisions in a timely fashion. And that there are areas where we stall out. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. I don't think it is a budget problem. I've said that over and over again. I don't think it's the budget. I think it has to do with how people work together. And I think that the tone with the principals could be changing all the way through the program, and it could probably make a lot of these things go away. That's the first thing. So what I was doing is really a triage of looking at what the board asked me to do, given the and especially in the light of the public testimony received in November and February, and looked at opportunities to make the program, both the science arm of the program, the policy arm of the program, function better. And I think that tone needs to be set from the leadership. So that's at the outset of this. And what I've seen as process is I submitted the first cut, right? I gave you, these are all of the things that I heard, that I've observed, that I heard from people that haven't participated for a few years that saw these as problems even then. And I gave you the dump of all of those things. And the language wasn't precise and specific. It was really to try to capture the spectrum. And I would argue that you don't need to just take any one of those things, or maybe you, in fact, I don't think it would be prudent to do that, and just implement it. I think there needs to be discussion and clarification and make sure everyone's on the same page about what it means. And so the whole point of this exercise was to dive into some of the details, refine it, to try to structure it in a way that it can be communicated to the board, those recommendations that I've made, and then the discussion about how to make the improvements. You know, I would encourage the board to listen to all of the participants, including myself as the administrator, but also all the caucus reps, before you make any changes. I think that's healthy, and I think it's entirely appropriate. So before we even get started, I just wanted to be really clear about that. And I don't see that this is a take my recommendations and turn them into actions. I don't think that is the healthiest thing to do. You have to balance all of the needs of all of the caucuses and of the program. What I was really focusing on was just the immediate needs that I see in the program. And that's my perspective in collating all of those things. So just that's the background context. So what I was going to talk to you about is, and really I think this might be something better for the board as a whole, but we can start here, which is, you've all, as board members, you've all been through the adaptive management training. And we've walked through all of the steps and where SAGs are, and you know, how CMR makes decisions and with consensus, and then those recommendations go to policy, and policy's job is to interpret how the science, the impacts of the science on the ground, and then that recommendation goes to the board about if and when it's necessary to change rules, right? It's a really simple construct. That's not really.
Go ahead and ask.
Please.
Yeah, board, no, ask them.
Brent, we're taking a little pause here.
Anybody out there now?
Anybody not?
Yes.
There was someone. It looked like uniform, but don't open the door.
Okay, great.
Ask through the door.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it is very distracting.
I know, no,
yeah.
I know.
Can't say. Have we ever had a forced practice board related meeting during a lockdown?
No.
We had to evacuate
once.
No. Everyone else upstairs is like hiking in
rooms.
I found some news online if you would like to have a quick update.
Oh, we're all online.
Sure, there. Well, I'm not.
No, you're not.
So the reason the blinds are shut is so people don't do what you're doing?
Yeah.
Don't look outside,
that
please.
That doesn't mean they'll think you're okay. Especially don't do it behind me.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Do you want to
make yourself a target.
It's so hard not to look.
But we're not done. Why don't finish the meeting, then we'll worry about whether we're...
I just thinking, well, you get an extra hour of public comment.
Except the people that look out the window.
I know, somebody just walked by, you guys. I just don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says the alert that went out says stay away from the windows,
yes.
Don't go out into the rotunda,
right.
Stay in your cubicles or, you know,
wherever
you are.
So, should we move away from the windows?
That is a question.
We should actually sit in a little circle on the floor.
We should probably be under the table.
Or you guys should at least be over there instead of right next to the windows. And you know, you're a little
man,
closer.
If it's my time.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're okay. Keep
going.
We don't have it for us. We're looking out the window.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You don't open the door.
Maybe it's probably solved.
I mean, they just don't want people gawking out the windows.
Yeah, right.
Creating targets, if you will.
But yeah, if you're more, you know, you guys roll chairs that direction if you're more comfortable moving away from windows. Jeff Davis.
Yeah.
I'm taking my chances.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's fine. So that was what I was going to say is it's been a while since the board has walked through what the process is for projects. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the TWIG process. You all hear about the TWIG, but structurally, you don't probably have a good sense of how that fits in, because when many of you were board, you know, were added to the board, it predated the TWIG process, so you probably don't know where that fits in. And so that has direct relevance to some of my recommendations. So what I was going to talk about today was just to give an overall perspective about how the projects, start and how they're through completion, how they're done today. And there's lots of different pathways, and so I didn't know if it would be better to give a presentation to the board and, you know, save the time for that and walk through the different pathways just for education, for so everybody is operating under the same kind of knowledge.
Based on the premise, it's hard to make recommendations and changes to a system that you don't fully understand
exactly
the intricacies of the system.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
So a refresher of that process at the board meeting, do we have time? You've got a lot on the agenda.
Our agenda is really packed this coming meeting. I think we need to the extent these board members need that, so that we can talk about recommendations to the okay. board, and then when we're ready, and I guess let's figure that out as we figure out what we're going to talk to the board about.
So that's our next. So that will actually. So that should be the prime part of our next.
Yes.
Let's get this. Let's get this. RFP process done.
Locked down. We could do it
for a while.
We could do it today, right?
Yeah.
You could walk us through today.
I can walk you through. It depends on how formal you want it. If you wanted a PowerPoint or if you wanted something like that. I don't know if that's necessary.
I don't think we need a PowerPoint on that.
Okay.
And
so
if I start looking confused, I see a whiteboard over there.
I can certainly do that. That's easier.
Okay. I guess I was trying to get through the agenda, assuming we'll be able to get out of here as we should, but maybe that is now a false parameter on my agenda management.
Yeah.
I hope we have another meeting, one I have to chair.
Well, you still can't leave. They don't let you leave.
I know.
So the overall structure, of course, The CEMER member approval process is pivotal in all of this, and that is done by board approval, right? CEMER members are nominated by their respective caucuses as CEMER members. There's a letter from their employer saying that they're going to cover the time that's necessary to be a fully participating CEMER member. Their credentials, their CV is reviewed and submitted to the board, and there's a recommendation for approval. And that comes to the board. You all agree that person is going to be a productive, helpful member of CEMER, and with all the criteria, then it goes back and they're now a voting member of CEMER. So that's an important piece. For policy, they're self-appointed, caucus-appointing participants at policy. Representatives from the nine caucuses are there, and they also vote consensus. One of the things that you heard was that there should be some kind of approval of policy representatives. That was something that I didn't say, but that's been brought to the board's attention. So that's kind of where I think that's where that originates from, is that we do it for CEMER but not for policy. Okay, so if there's, so the priorities, the way that it should work is the priorities are set for evaluating the effectiveness of rules, and that gets handed to CEMER, and CEMER is responsible for developing a path forward for that. So it would go to a larger, so it goes to the larger body of CEMER, and then CEMER recommends that or they give the assignment to a particular SAG that participates, scientific advisory group. And this is where I say that we really need to have subject matter expertise in the specific area of the SAG. And sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. And that's where the study design and the scoping and those things lie in the traditional program. They could form, they could do the work within the SAG. They could form a technical advisory group, like a subcommittee of a SAG to do that work. They could hire a contractor to do it, but it would all be reported back to the SAG, and then from the SAG it would go to CMR. Okay, that's the traditional way. That's the way that this has been structured. Now, we did a pilot for these, for what we call the TWIGs, which was in place of a SAG, and the idea is that the people that are working on the study design would report directly to CMR instead of having this tag to the SAG to CMR process. There's a couple of review steps there, and instead there would be one review and it would be had at the CMR level. So that was to streamline the front end of what we call the front end of projects to make the study design happen in a more timely fashion without all of the redundant review steps. And what has happened is, I would argue, that process has taken longer than it did with the original process, because we didn't have, there were a number of mistakes that were made in how that was implemented. Relying on outside people and inside people without having specific contracts and specific expectations for deliverables, and some of those things, what happened was those groups did some of the work that a SAG would typically do, which is really scoping out the objectives of the study, the critical pieces and the critical questions that were answered to get an approval from policy before they moved forward. And that process was more challenging for people from the outside because they don't deal with some of the internal needs of the caucuses as much, and they're more strictly scientists. And so we got fouled up in a lot of the projects at that phase. And so what we've done at CMR is we've approved changes to change the TWIG process by leaning on SAGs at the beginning for those early pieces, and then using outside expertise when it really was a technical issue for the study design, and then they would bring those forward. And so that seems to have helped our process quite a bit. We've had a number of the TWIGs that have suffered less of that. We haven't carried any one through the entire part of it, but we started doing some things to refine it, which I think helped us catch up with some of the early ones that had problems, so there were some lessons learned. But we still struggle to get study designs done in a timely fashion. So that's still a challenge. And with either the original SAG tag side or with this new TWIG process, both of those still are struggling. And so what I was trying to do with this piece, part of the struggle was because SAG members felt excluded from the TWIG process that was going on. And so when it would come out of that, the TWIG would make a recommendation, SAG members were seeing it for the first time, and then they had some issues with what was being proposed before it even, or actually at the CMR level. And then when things got to policy, there were still some issues that would come up there as well with different components of the study, where I don't think there was good. It wasn't so much policy. I think policy wandered into the technical realm quite a bit in almost like a second CMR in many ways for the review. And so that our lean process, I don't think really got a fair shake because of the way it was conducted. And so what I'm trying to think of, so what I was trying to do in these recommendations, so I was trying to take the pieces of the lean process that make a lot of sense technically and put them into this structure where people feel like they get enough of an opportunity to be involved and have a communication, that some kind of a dialogue with the TWIG before they see products for the first time. And so that was what I was attempting to do. Now what it does is it structures it more like it was traditionally with tags, but instead of having tags being made up of entirely cooperators, it would put more of a focus with outside experts into the SEMA process. So it would make use of outside people more than it would strictly in the old process of using cooperators. It's not to exclude cooperators. You would still have cooperator involvement. And more importantly, you have cooperator review at the SAG and at SEMA, which seems more appropriate to me. And then moving it forward, that would help maintain the scientific integrity of the studies, but also put it in the proper context before it goes to policy. So that's what I'm trying to balance in most of these recommendations, is really looking at the strength in TFW is that you do have this buy-in from all of these stakeholders. No doubt about it, that's the strength. Now, the weakness of TFW is trying to accommodate 9 different perspectives. So it's both the strength and the weakness. And so we have to figure out a way to accentuate the strength and try to come up with ideas to minimize the potential conflict. And so that really is, in a nutshell, what the intent of those recommendations, or the lens that I used when I was listening to people and trying to make improvements. There's still going to be people problems, and that's probably what you've heard from others, talking about these people that behave in certain ways, or this example of this behavior or that behavior. We're never going to get away from that. That's not reality. We can't police it to the point, I don't even think we want to police it, no, to the point that we get into those kinds of details.
Okay, let's take a breath right, yeah, there, because I'm at 1:45, I want to start a public comment, and I want committee members to get a chance to, Hans covered a lot of ground there, but are there questions, clarifications? I mean, the purpose of providing that kind of a background is, and then how does that feed into these very specific listed under the subcategory simple changes that can be made based on that structural, yeah, organizational framework.
Right.
Questions, comments, David?
I had a question about, you had said that you'd mentioned the 2 review processes, including the lean, which I remember when that was, we went through that but you said that there were recommendations from the lean process that weren't, that were never followed through with, I think.
NRB is still in lockdown.
They're searching NRB now.
Yeah. And from what I understand, if there's a knock and if it's the police, they're supposed to identify themselves.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So someone knocked and did not identify themselves,
right,
as the police?
Right.
Joe Storer, I think it's...
Yeah, Joe Storer.
Oh. This says we're all
quiet.
Sorry.
It could be a lot of people that don't.
Well,
want to get in here.
They're opening up the building. It's all clear. They had some reports of shots fired over in OB2. They swept through OB2 and haven't found anything. They're talking to a couple of the witnesses right now that reported the shots fired. So there'll be an official notice to, you know, the building's open and everything's okay. So. I just been scrambling up down the stairs.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
So it's an all clear?
King
Fox, yeah,
was it an all clear?
They're opening up the building, so.
Okay. A number, but it's funny that they would post and,
yeah,
not have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Thanks. I got to learn the secret knock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I can help you.
Hello.
Okay.
We got the all clear. They just have enterprise services.
So that were the recommendations from lean process, were they not all implemented?
Yes, that's what you said. And so I was curious whether what your recommendations are, attempts to implement some of those recommendations.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of it has to do with when we ask outside people to participate, they're fitting it into their schedule unless mm-hmm. they're under contract. And so we've had a situation where they just didn't have time to put the, to you know, do our work with all the other work. And so some of the things that I'm talking about are getting contracts in place, but also being specific about when you're signing up for this, you're not signing up for 5 years. We want the contract to accomplish this thing, this particular part, let's say the study design, but we don't expect your participation after this point, and come up with the money if we need to pay them, or just have a contract or agreement with a company or an agency. But we need to have that structure in place in order to meet those objectives in the league. I think they were well intended, but the execution was difficult because of the varying commitment.
Okay. Paula, did you have follow-up questions to this structural?
I was a little bit struck by your comment that